Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. It's Chase and Josh with Factor Fantasy. That's Chase and I'm Josh, and we are here to give you the next installment here of Season 1, Demon Slayer. We're going to be guiding you through Episodes 13 through 15 today. Chase took us through the last three last week. That means I'll be in the driver's seat for this one. Again, we're going to be covering Episodes 13, 14, and 15. Before I jump on into it, I'm going to turn the floor over to Chase to say a few words.
Yeah, man, just keep running up the mountain there, running up that hill. we're gonna start getting into some good action today, and it just keeps going, keeps climbing. It just gets even better and better.
For sure. And you know, just like you mentioned, it starts off in the middle of the action from where Chase left us off last week at the end of episode 12. So going to dive right into episode 13 right here, we pick up where episode 12 left off with the drum demon continuously rotating the room using those drums that are sewn into his body. You know, Tanjiro finally gathers his feet and he tells the demon he's not going to yield. And while this is happening, Zenitsu is searching for Tanjiro while looking after one of the siblings. And he's still scared and doesn't even want to go into the first room because it's so dark, but he finally does. And when he does, he realizes the room is rotating and it tosses him and the boy out of the window. So now they are outside. And back to Tanjiro, he's continuing his fight with the drum demon. He mentions that he has a few broken bones, but he stays resilient. And he realizes he has to think through the issue at hand instead of relying on pure determination. And the drum demon says he needs to consume some Mirechi before it's too late. And as we talked about last week, Mirechi is a certain type of blood that is more valuable to demons than just regular human blood. And one of the sibling boys there was a Mirechi there. And so that's the whole issue, is Tanjiro's trying to save this kid from getting eaten. This demon needs to eat this kid. And we're going to find out why he's so intent on it specifically in just a little bit. But in the meantime here, Tanjiro tells the demon that he will not give him the child and that's futile. And when Tanjiro mentions the word futile, this causes the demon to have a quick flashback to hearing the words, it's futile. And you see him kind of go to a place in his head where the memory may not have been a happy one for the demon. But the demon shouts back that he will get to the boy and reclaim his place among the 12 Kizuki. So this means at this point, at one point in time, this drum demon, Kyogai, he was one of the 12 Kizuki. And that's why he needs this Mirechi blood so bad, because the additional extra whatever properties the Mirechi blood has, he believes it's going to be enough to bring him back into one of the 12 Kizuki. So there's a few things going on here. We realize that the Kizuki can be brought in and brought out. It's not just a set 12 until they all die. This is a ongoing thing. It's like in your old MySpace with your friends in your top eight. If they were acting up throughout the week, you can change them in order, you know, and that's what Muzan can do here as well with the 12 Kizuki. And so he's trying to get back into the good graces and become one of the 12 again. Chase, how important was this part to you to understand a little bit more about the Kizuki and understand that these guys are fighting a demon that used to be part of the 12 Kizuki?
Yeah, it really makes you think a lot more of Kyoga here, the drum demon, because you gain a lot more respect for him, because up until this point, we really haven't found any demon that's really, you can consider a threat. Like, I know we saw Yahaba and Sesamaru, the Temari twins, but remember, they thought they were part of the 12 Kizuki, but you know, meanwhile, you know, Muzan's killing them from thousands of miles away just with like his blood demon art, right? Or what we would probably consider as part of one of his special abilities. So it makes you gain a little bit more respect for him. But I thought it was pretty cool because we're finally starting to see just a little taste of how intense it's going to start to get within the ranks.
Yeah, 100%. And so now the Kyogai, the drum demon, he starts hammering the drums and the flashback ensues once more. And it's that same person telling him that his writing is shit and that his writing is a waste of ink and paper. And so he even tells him that he needs to go back to playing the drums, but he's nothing more than an amateur at that too. So then while he's having this flashback, that shows his initial transformation into a demon, and he opens up a shirt and he has the center drum sewn on, and he smacks it, and we see his very first kill was murdering that guy who was saying all that nasty shit to him. That claw went right through him. You can see that it was a silhouette, so you didn't see it happen in real time, but you can get an idea of what that must have looked like, the aftermath, and kind of what we've seen from Demon Slayer so far. You know, they're not afraid to throw bodies on the ground and like, contorted in awkward angles and make it look real grotesque. And you know, we can only imagine what that must have looked like with that guy cut into five different pieces. In any event, back to present day, Kyogai, the drum demon, starts hammering the drums even faster now. He's like in a trance almost. He had to go back to that flashback where everything was so, when was that his catalytic moment of when he decided that he had to go full bad guy and kill this dude who's, he probably looked up to him as a mentor as well, and someone he's opinion he really valued, and the guy just kind of really shunned him. And so now he's in this weird trance and he starts hammering it and going faster. The rhythm's crazy. And Tanjiro is essentially stuck in a constant spin. He's not even touching the ground here. And the demon is using five claws now instead of three. And finally, Tanjiro is able to touch down, but he carefully avoids stepping on the papers. And he realizes he can protect his wounds now that he can move around and breathe. And so using a breathing technique to reinforce the muscles around his broken leg, he realizes that a smell of mold comes just before the claw attack. And so Tanjiro ends up finally using total concentration water breathing, ninth form, splashing water flow turbulent. And he minimizes the landing time and area, gets within striking distance, and he sees the opening thread. And right before he strikes, Tanjiro yells to Kyogai. He says, "Kyogai, your blood demon art was truly incredible." Then takes Kyogai's head off with his Nichirin sword. Right here, Tanjiro, after he lands, he's pretty injured from his fight. The head of Kyogai speaks to him again and asks Tanjiro if he thought that his blood demon art was truly incredible. And Tanjiro told him yes, but that he can't forgive him for killing. And this is the part where Tanjiro, he pulls out this little file thing and he throws it. And it sticks inside the demon's body, and it takes a blood sample from the phial that Yushiro gave him. And now a cat appears with the same signature on that piece of paper that he gave to Tanjiro back when he was fighting the Temari twins, as Chase likes to call them, and it gave him this ability of sight there. So the cat appears, takes a phial, then it disappears, and Tanjiro goes to find the rest of the siblings. And Kyogai has one last flashback about his writing and being talked down to by whoever was judging his work. And he is thankful that Tanjiro took care not to step on his writing. And he passes on to the next world, thankful that his drum playing demon art and his writing has been recognized. And Tanjiro runs to find the kids and guides them all outside. But before they get outside, Tanjiro smells blood. And when he gets to the outside area, he sees the boarhead demon slayer. I know he named him last week, but this part he hasn't fully introduced himself. So just for fun, we'll just wait for it for a little bit. But the boarhead demon slayer is kicking Zenitsu repeatedly while Zenitsu is covering the box that holds Nezuko. He tells Tanjiro that he protected the box since Tanjiro told him the box was more important to Tanjiro than Tanjiro's own life. And we also learn that Zenitsu's superpower is super hearing. So where Tanjiro is able to smell, Zenitsu is able to hear just as well as Tanjiro is able to smell, and that's his own special ability. And here the scene moves back to when Zenitsu and Shoichi first got thrown out the window, how Zenitsu shielded Shoichi so he didn't get injured, but injured himself with the back of his head bleeding. Then the boarhead demon slayer came out of the house sensing another demonic presence. And Zenitsu remembers that where he heard that voice before and how it's the fifth survivor from Final Selection. The first to go up the mountain and the first to make it back down. And this is when the boarhead man rushes the box that Nezuko's in and is about to attack when Zenitsu blocks his way. The boarhead demon slayer demands that Zenitsu moves. Zenitsu refuses. And the boarhead demon slayer tells Zenitsu that there's a demon in the box. But Zenitsu says he's known the whole time. And that Tanjiro must have a good reason for it. That's when the boarhead demon slayer starts beating on Zenitsu, stomping on him, causing him to bleed, which full circle is where Tanjiro comes in smelling that blood before he got outside and before we got this little mini flashback. So now we're at present time again, where Tanjiro walks up on the boarhead demon slayer attacking Zenitsu while Zenitsu is protecting the box, and the boarhead demon slayer keeps beating on Zenitsu and threatens to take Zenitsu out, and Tanjiro finally yells for the boarhead demon slayer to stop, and rushes at him full speed. And before anything happens, the episode ends. And that is the entirety of episode 13 in season 1 of Demon Slayer. So, Chase, what are your takeaways there from episode 13?
It was awesome, man. It was action-packed. You got to see really also the appreciation of Tanjiro for this blood demon art that these demons have, especially with his last statement there, and really appreciating Kyogai's art that was so unique as far as like the drums and changing the rooms. And he really gave Tanjiro his first real challenge. Like, I mean, I guess you can say the Temari twins were pretty challenging, but also he had a lot of help there too, I would say. So it was more of like a team effort with that. This is one where truly Tanjiro kind of took him on his own. I know Inosuke was there for a minute, but it really was Tanjiro's first kind of single-handed challenge, right? Almost like a UFC cage fight. And then at the same time, my boy Zenitsu, you see, he's a little badass over here protecting that box. And he took a beating, but he's loyal. Like, he's one of the most loyal guys. Like, he didn't betray Tanjiro. He knew Tanjiro was really trying to protect that box from where he was traveling with him before, despite Tanjiro saying how pathetic he was. And we know he's not, because he's the best of the best. He kicks ass, just like he cut that guy's head off and cut that guy's tongue off. So, and you got to see his special ability with the hearing. So it's also very unique, all the different special abilities we see with these slayers. It's almost like slayers like Buffy the Vampire Slayer, right? It's almost like the ones that made it through final selection. There's something very unique about them, and they're all so different. So I thought it was a great episode. I mean, it was a lot of action, but also you did have those moments where you got to see a little bit more into our three, I guess you could call them our golden trio that we're probably going to grow with here, and how almost comparison to like Harry Potter. Remember when Ron and Harry, you know, they didn't really get started on the exact good foot with Hermione there. And then now it's kind of taken, like, Zenitsu's taking a stand for Tanjiro, and you're kind of seeing these three start to come together in their own way.
Yeah, I think that some of the things are going to move on into episode 14 for any sort of like common ground between anyone. But I will say for this episode here in episode 13, what I found really interesting is that the Kyogai, you almost could draw a direct comparison to things people go through in real life. Like, if you've ever had a teacher that you looked up to but kind of talked down or told you you're never going to amount to anything, or, you know, really kind of was super negative about your work even though you did your best, it can be really debilitating and can kind of drain your spirit a bit. And you can kind of see that's exactly what happened to Kyogai here, all the way to the part where, you know, he ended up killing the guy who tore him down, you know, not just his writing but also his drum playing. And you know, some people, you don't understand the words that you say to somebody can really impact you. So I thought it was kind of cool that it almost showed on screen a little bit of an exaggerated event of things that do happen in real life. So I found that really cool. And I also just thought the same as Tanjiro, thought that Kyoga's blood demon art wasn't really interesting. And to be able to sit there and rotate a room with drums on your shoulders and on your sides and on your chest and back and any way, and you have a claw thing that goes through and rips shit apart when it gets to a certain like beat. And there's just, we are seeing new abilities by these demons, not just the demon slayers, but by the demons as well. They're new blood art abilities that really are unique and creative. So I thought that was really cool. And the fact that Tanjiro did all that with a broken leg, and he was injured in other ways too, and with his breathing was able to tighten the muscles around it so that way he can muster an attack that was a little bit, didn't really have a good footing for and didn't really have a good balance or the ideal circumstance, but he was able to think through the problem and figure out a way to get it done. And same that we talked about last week, we were able to see as Kyogai is passing on into the next world a little bit about the backstory of why they became the way they were and a little bit of who they were before they were a demon, and how, generally speaking, most of them come from a really just a sad situation, and stuff that didn't happen well for them, and so this was their answer. You know, they became the worst versions of themselves, and obviously being changed into a demon can happen in a couple different ways, but I thought that was really cool to see. And then, you know, to kind of close out, the takeaways I had is, you know, Zenitsu, he is someone I'm not the biggest fan of, but he does show up in important moments. He still doesn't even realize that he's the one that killed the other demon, the little lizard-looking one with the tongue. He still thinks it was Shoichi. And so he's got some level of strength to him, but on top of that, his loyalty and his willingness to put himself in front of Nezuko's box, even though he knew he couldn't compete in physical strength with this other demon slayer who's attacking him. All he wanted to do was make sure that he gave up his body to make sure that whatever was in the box that was so important to Tanjiro wasn't harmed. So I thought that was really cool, and you saw a little bit of Zenitsu's character. Even though he might be a coward and he might not be great at fighting and he's got to be unconscious to really be useful in certain ways, he does have a good heart. And I thought that was really cool, and the first time I really got to see some semblance of great qualities from Zenitsu. And you know, those are my takeaways about episode 13 there. And just to go ahead and shift on in to episode 14, this episode again picks up where 13 left off, with Tanjiro rushing the boarhead demon slayer. And Tanjiro attacks and punches the boarhead demon slayer in the ribs and ends up breaking a few of them. And Tanjiro reminds the boarhead demon slayer that members of the demon slayer corps are not allowed to fight each other without provocation. And that's when the boarhead demon slayer gets up and demands they fight barehanded and attacks Tanjiro. And they have a quick one-on-one where each gets some hits in on the other. Tanjiro notices the techniques that the boarhead demon slayer uses are unusually low, as if he's battling a four-legged beast. And I thought this was kind of cool. He almost had this really interesting moment where Tanjiro's like, all right, well, I'm going to get low too. But he's still, the boarheaded demon slayer is able to get a little bit lower, then throws his leg up behind his own head to go in front of him with his heel and smash down on Tanjiro's head and come back. He had some insane flexibility, and that's when Tanjiro finally grabs him by the shoulders, shouts for him to calm down, and headbutts him one hard time, and headbutted the shit out of him. Ends up knocking the boarheaded demon slayer's mask off, and they remark on the man's delicate features, which it made me kind of laugh. They almost thought he was like too pretty to be a guy in a way. And the man wants to continue fighting, but Tanjiro says no. And that's when he finally introduces himself as his full name. We now know him as Inosuke Hashibira. And we learn that Inosuke doesn't know how to read or write. And as Inosuke is rambling on, we have a delayed reaction here, is as he's continuing his rambling, he ends up collapsing from Tanjiro's headbutt. So I thought that was pretty funny. And now we've got the name of the new guy here. What do you think about Inosuke to this point, Chase?
Inosuke Hashibira. Yeah, he's definitely, he kind of reminds me of like if Tarzan had a bad attitude, is kind of the way I think of him. I kind of feel sorry for him in a way, though, because like some people, you know, they kind of hide all of their emotional demons with this tough kind of persona, and I think that's kind of a Inosuke in a way. However, he is a very skilled fighter. I mean, it's something to be said for him that he kind of grew up in the wilderness and taught himself how to fight, and you can see his animal instincts and how he kind of pulled like the MMA move with like the underground sweep on Tanjiro there. And he definitely is, my only issue with him is he doesn't really think, just like we were talking about last week. Like, what you see is kind of what you get for the moment. Like, he just kind of full force goes through, right? He doesn't really think about the after effects. Like, not once in that entire situation, even going from the episode previously you talked about into this one, Did he ever think about the consequences of if a Demon Slayer Corps member fought each other? Which is why, for a minute, Tanjiro, like, hesitated while Zenitsu was just getting beat on. He didn't give a fuck. Like, he was beating the shit out of Zenitsu and then wanted to take on Tanjiro. Like, not for 1 minute did he give a fuck about what the repercussions of that would be. Not to mention, like, he definitely seems like one of those people that has trouble working in a team environment, I would say. Like, he's kind of like for himself on his own. Same thing with how we saw him in the house, the rotating house. Like, he just jumped through the rooms. Like, never once did he try to help Tanjiro when he was in the same room. Like, he was just charged Kyoga. So, I don't know. I think he's kind of, at least at this moment in time, I think he's a very self-centered, irrational person, but I think he's a good person deep down. I just think he hides a lot of his intentions, I would say.
Yeah, man, not a lot I disagree with there. And speaking of Inosuke, to get right back into it, Inosuke finally wakes up and he's got Tanjiro's coat over him and has like little padding for a pillow under his head, and he's fucking furious about it. He wakes up and demands to fight Zenitsu again. Zenitsu sprints away and runs and hides. He hides behind the little girl sibling while the other ones are sitting there around this little rock cropping we're about to find out about. And that's where Tanjiro, he's holding a burial for the people who lost their lives inside the house. But Inosuke, he runs up on him and tries to fight everyone there, and he doesn't see the point about burying the dead, and he just wants to finish their fight. And so I loved this part myself personally. This is the part where Tanjiro tricks his ass and uses his own pride against him. And he tells Inosuke, he's like, "Oh, it's okay, Inosuke. I know you're in too much pain from our battle. You probably couldn't even bury these people anyways. Like, I'm so sorry for asking too much of you." It's like the same thing you would do to one of your friends of like, "Oh, it's okay, man. I know you can't do it." No, but like, just to get him to do it anyways, you know, like, "Oh, I bet you won't do this," that kind of deal. And just to kind of play on someone's pride and ego. And it ends up working, obviously. Inosuke starts freaking out. He's like, "Ah, I can absolutely, I can bury 100 bodies. No, 200 bodies. And starts like flying around the place trying to do some extra work. So thought that Tanjiro used his own shit against him in a way. And this is when Tanjiro's crow flies overhead and screeches for them to descend the mountain and follow him. And Zenitsu begs Shoichi to stay with them and protect him because, again, Zenitsu still doesn't know that it was himself that killed the demon earlier in the house, not Shoichi. The crow spits out a little baggie of sorts, and it has a scent and an emblem on it. And he gives it to Shoichi because Shoichi's the one with the Morechi blood. And Tanjiro says it smells like wisteria, and we know that demons can't stand wisteria, so it's a form of protection for the boy. What'd you think about this little baggie of wisteria here? And, you know, what would you kind of equivalent it to in another show?
In another show? I don't know what I would really equivalent it to. I don't know. That's maybe like a protective spell in Harry Potter or something. I'm not quite sure, but the wisteria leaves, it's very interesting because so many people kind of gloss over that, like when they first see that during final selection, and they've played such an intricate role up to this point, even much later on in the series. And it really is kind of like, it's almost like a crucifix in a way for like a vampire or something like that. Like, it protects, it kind of is like that one kind of protection that they have. Like, I almost, like, wonder, one thing, I think it would be interesting to see, like, a bomb of wisteria leaves if they were ever thrown on a demon or something to see what it would do. But, yeah, it definitely played a role when they received that because they know shit's about to hit the fan.
And for me, you know, I don't know if anyone listening here has ever watched The Vampire Diaries or not, but it reminded me a lot of Vervain. That in the very first few episodes of season one, that Stefan gave Elena in a necklace so that way Damon couldn't use his vampire powers on her because Vervain made vampires weak when it was around them. So it reminded me of that. But also, to Chase's point in Harry Potter, it reminded me of when Fred and George sold their items with protection spells on them to the Ministry of Magic. Like, they had the self-repelling cloaks and the hats and things. So it reminded me a little bit of that. And I don't know how much it's going to play a role, but at the very least, he's got some level of protection now. And he's going to need it if these demons think Moretti blood is something special. And to get back into it, this part, Shoichi and the other siblings part ways with Tanjiro, Inosuke, and Zenitsu. And now we just follow Tanjiro, Inosuke, and Zenitsu. And Inosuke can't say Tanjiro's name right. And this is a reoccurring thing. He just always calls him something different from his actual name, no matter how many times Tanjiro tells him what his real name is. And he just won't let go of the fact that he just wants to continuously finish the fight that they had. He just keeps going after him. And Tanjiro's kind of just had it. He's just annoyed. But it gets to the point where Inosuke even wants to eat the crow, where they stop at the elderly person's house, and the crow even has a little reaction when he says, "Let's eat it." So we get to this elderly person's house. This old woman comes out, greets them as demon slayers, and she lets them in. She shows them where they'll rest and where they'll eat. And Inosuke eats like an animal with his hands and ends up forgetting all about Nezuko's box, which is ridiculous because that was a whole point that this whole battle even started to begin with. He was attacking Zenitsu because he wanted to get to the box because he knew there was a demon inside the box. But throughout this whole thing, after the fight with Tanjiro, all he wants to do is attack everyone. Forgot all about the damn box that's in there. And now he is really a one-track mind kind of guy. Whatever he's thinking about in that moment, that's all that matters to Inosuke. And then from here, they each claim their sleeping mats. The doctor comes in, gives them a checkup, tells them it's all bad. All three of them have broken ribs. Inosuke has a huge lump on his forehead where Tanjiro headbutted him. And Zenitsu wants Inosuke to apologize for attacking him, but Inosuke refuses. And we learn that the reason they are being able to stay at this house is that the house has the Wisteria family crest on it, meaning it belonged to a family who was rescued by demon slayers, and that's why they are housing them free of charge and giving them meals and allowing them to rest up. And then from here, Tanjiro asks Inosuke why he joined the demon slayer corps. Inosuke says he fought a member of the corps to see who was stronger, and he took the other demon slayer's sword as a reward, which is why he has two of them. Bro, like, is this even allowed? Like, obviously, we already talked about that, you know, it's against the rules for demon slayers to fight each other. And at that point, when they did that battle, Inosuke wasn't a demon slayer. But still, to take that dude's sword, then to go earn your own and just try, like, you know, we talked about the way Inosuke's blades looked last week when he has the little chips in them and, like, the serrated edges. What do you think about him taking the sword of another Demon Slayer guy? And what ended up happening to the other Demon Slayer guy after their fight? They just go back and be like, yeah, this human whipped my ass and took my sword? Like, what do you think happened?
I wonder, like, how the fuck he found out where Final Selection was. Like, I wonder if he, like, stole, like, his fucking... I wonder if, like, that core member had, like, information on him is probably what happened. And he, like, searched his uniform and took it and then just put it on or something. I have no idea, but it makes you wonder, like, how the fuck he found himself there. And then once he found himself there, I guess just because he survived, they were, like... probably thought, like, how the fuck did you get here? But I guess since you survived, I guess we'll let you partake in the award ceremony, so this makes you part of the core. Like, think of that too. Like, he basically just stole his shit and started, like, participating. Like, how did he even find out about this stuff? He has no master, he has no trainer. Like, he was just, like, taught himself out in the wild, stole this guy's shit and showed up one day.
And I just stole. He beat the guy in a contest of arms. So what was he even using? If this Demon Slayer had a sword, what the heck was Inosuke using? And he wasn't using anything. Like, well, how did this other guy pass Final Selection? Like, how are you going to have a random human just whip your ass and take your shit? Like, that guy must have quit the Demon Slayer Corps right after that. He said, fuck that. I'm not going to tell anyone what just happened. He just ran away from everything, dude. I don't know. But to go ahead and continue on, Inosuke says only one thing brings him comfort in the world, and that's testing his strength against others. And Zenitsu asks Tanjiro why he's traveling with a demon. So now the elephant in the room is brought up. Like, what's in the box? What's in the box? But Tanjiro tells Zenitsu that Zenitsu is a good person, and Zenitsu freaks out because the box isn't locked. And he runs away and tries to hide, because as this is a conversation is happening, something's crawling out of the box. Us, we know what it is because we've seen Nezuko a bunch of times, but to Zenitsu, this looks crazy and he's freaking out. And finally, Nezuko comes out of the box, draws herself up to full height. It has her hair in all the right place. It just looks real nice and shiny, even though she's got a piece of bamboo still stuck in her teeth. But regardless, it didn't matter to Zenitsu, because Zenitsu looks at her and he's immediately love-struck. And he starts hooting and hollering, screaming at Tanjiro, even draws his blade at him because he kept such a beautiful creature in a box this whole time. Starts yelling about it's not his job to protect him, just sitting there with a cute girl that he, like, what the hell is he doing? And he's outraged that Tanjiro's been traveling with her in secret and loses his mind. And the episode pans out as he's still shouting at Tanjiro. He's doing his whole little Zenitsu freak out voice thing that Chase loves to do so well. And it's just one of those things where it was all fine and dandy, had no problem doing it. Then a pretty girl comes out, and we're going to see that this is kind of a reoccurring theme with Zenitsu. Anytime a woman's around, this guy kind of loses his mind. What do you think about that, dude?
I thought it was great. He's a ladies man.
Oh, gosh.
I mean, we saw him, what was it, a few episodes back where he was like, will you marry me? Well, now, you know, we're really seeing where his heart lies. And all I'll say is really pay attention for these moments that you don't think about, because these are a lot of really big foreshadowing moments. But, you know, as Selena Gomez says, for Zenitsu, the heart wants what it wants, man.
Yeah, and that is actually where the episode closes out at. And so for episode 14, brother, what did you have for your takeaways, some of the things that stood out to you?
Yeah, I thought it was great. I mean, it's not as action-packed, but it was a lot of details where we're finding more about our characters here, our trio, I guess we would say. We've learned more about Inosuke and how he literally just came from nowhere and stole people's shit. Zenitsu, you know, he kind of sense maybe, you know, maybe there's something there with the girl in the box. I'm the girl in the box. The man in the box is Alice in Chains, but I feel like that should be Zenitsu's song. you know, you're really seeing these characters have this strong bond, and even like the Wisteria leaves, you're seeing so much even more of a significance now of, like, even think about the crucifix with Wisteria leaves and kind of how you had, it's almost like reminds me of like almost like a safe zone where like our heroes here, I guess we always say, like, can kind of recover at this point. And that's one thing I really love about this series is, you know, so many series, like, your main guy gets hurt and like the next day he's okay. Well, this isn't that series. Like, you learn where these guys get hurt, they're in real danger here. Like, it's real human wounds that take time. And we've seen the time lapses just even in the small time we've been on our journey with these three. Technically four, but one's in a box a lot of times. So with our four, right? Our four companions here. So I thought it was great. I loved the detail. I love the foreshadowing and full circle moments we're already starting to have here in this series, and looking forward to more, man. What about you?
Yeah, for me, this one was definitely a slower episode. I think that there is some important detail, of course, but it's by far not my favorite. I guess the biggest thing that happened really is we got to see more of Inosuke and get to know his personality, his character, and that is important for who he is and who he's going to be moving forward in the series. I did think it was cool to, and that little safe house that Chase was talking about with the elderly woman where she fed them sushi and you know, kind of took care of them. It reminded me a little bit of the Pokemon centers in the Pokemon anime. Got to kind of relax and gather your bearings. But like Chase said, it does take time where the doctor first came in and he's like, yeah, this is all bad. You know, and they're like he said, it's not just a one day thing and they're out. And we're going to see a little bit more about that going into the final episode that we'll cover here in just a moment. But also, I did think it was a big moment where Zenitsu and Nezuko see each other for the very first time. And you're right, you know, there could be something that sparks from that And on top of it, though, what we've seen, and then we get to see further from Zenitsu's character, of how he changes personalities based on very few factors. You know, he's typically a cowardly person who's afraid of everything, but when he falls asleep, turns into this badass fucking sword killer. And then when a girl's involved, the bro acts like he's a brand new human, that like he's never been scared of anything in his life. And that's funny too, because that's going to play a little bit of a role, just a small one, in the next episode when it comes to doing a task that may be a little scary. And at first, maybe he's a little hesitant, and then, you know, obviously he thinks about something and then it changes his mind. But I don't want to get too much into that. Point being is that of all the episodes so far, this is definitely one of the ones I'd rank kind of towards the bottom. It was more of a background info sort of episode, but it was good to see one of the safe houses. You know, get to learn more about each of the characters a bit. We see the crow giving them directions, and, you know, it was great to just kind of move forward of, in, you know, the episodes begins with them beating, well, obviously it was a continuation of the previous episode of them beating the hell out of each other, but, you know, how they essentially really couldn't stand Inosuke, and Inosuke couldn't stand them, and now they're all staying at the same area, and we're going to see if any ties of friendship start to be built from that. So from there, I'll go into the final episode that we're going to cover today. It's episode 15. And episode 15 picks up where episode 14 left off, with Zenitsu still screaming at Tanjiro. And now we have it move past the initial replay of the last few moments of the previous episode into this one. And Nezuko climbs out of the box. And this is where Zenitsu has his first conversation with her, even though Nezuko can't really speak. She's still got that bamboo in her mouth, so she's not biting any humans. But Zenitsu is all up on her, asking her how she is, and he's chasing her around, and she's like walking away terrified, like, what is this thing doing? Why is it chasing me around this room? Which is hilarious, because remember, Nezuko's a demon. She's got plenty of power and strength that we're going to see many times over in this series, but she's so freaked out by this dude chasing around, she doesn't know what the hell to do except run away, and he's just all up on her ass. And he tries to make Tanjiro his best friend to get close to Nezuko. He's like, Tanjiro, let's be best friends. I can't even do the fucking voice. But regardless, it was ridiculous. Now he's chasing both Tanjiro and Nezuko around the damn room. And they're both kind of freaked out. And while that's happening, the old woman of the house offers to clean Inosuke's clothes and make him tempura for dinner. And he is so taken aback by these acts of kindness that he runs into the other room and headbutts Tanjiro and chases everyone around because he's just so uncomfortable. And that looks like no one's ever shown him kindness really in his life, so he doesn't really know what to do. And that could be a big thing going forward in Inosuke's, you know, backstory and why he is the way that he is. And this is where the doctor comes back in finally and tells him that they are all better now. And then Tanjiro's crow returns, tells him that their next mission is north-northeast, and that they are to go to Mount Natagumo immediately. And Tanjiro thanks the old lady for her hospitality. She bestows good luck upon them by striking sparks. It drives Inosuke mad because he doesn't know why that is. He finds something disrespectful about it and starts screaming at the old lady. And Zenitsu's screaming at him that it's a sign of good luck. These guys just don't know when to stop. And as they are getting closer and closer to Mount Natagumo, Zenitsu is getting scared as they approach her destination, and he wants to wait and stay back. And Tanjiro, but he smells something that's a little bit off, and he goes to investigate, and Inosuke goes with him while they leave Zenitsu behind. And they find a member of the Demon Slayer Corps seriously wounded and asking for help. And what looks like spiderweb strings pull the boy off the ground and into the air. And as he's being pulled away in midair, he yells to Tanjiro and the others to not let him die there. And that's when Inosuke and Tanjiro head into the woods at the base of Mount Natagumo. And we see a few shadows of people. And this is a foreshadow in the shadows, no pun intended, of some of the characters that we're going to meet that may give our heroes one of the toughest tests they face, and certainly the hardest one they face in season one. But in any event, we see a few shadows and then a silhouette of a lady sitting on a rock, but her face is not yet shown. And Inosuke and Tanjiro notice spiderwebs sticking all around them. And to this same point, Inosuke still is not used to people being kind to him. So when Tanjiro thanks him for his help, he really doesn't know what to say, and it ends up having a flashback to the old woman's kindness, and he's very uncomfortable with it. And Tanjiro finds another member of the Demon Slayer Corp and tells him that he is there to help and that his rank is Mizunoto. The boy's not happy at all because he believes they should have been sent a Hashira with the peril they are facing. The boy tells him that 10 of the Korra gathered there to Mount Nagatomo, and when they entered the mountain, something went wrong almost immediately and they started killing each other. And the scene cuts to the leader of the Demon Slayer Corps group there. The scene cuts to the overall leader of the Demon Slayer Corps, and one of the crows returned to bring him news. This is the man that has a scarred face and it looks like he has no eyes. And as you see the scene happen on screen, it looks like the crow almost dies of exhaustion in the attempt. You see it like breathing super heavy with like the sweat emoji kind of hanging down its eyebrow there, really giving you the idea that the crow almost gave its life to make sure it got the message to the leader of the entire Demon Slayer Corps. The crow gives the leader news that most of his children have been killed and that it's possible that the 12 Kizuki are there. And so he makes the decision to send in some Hashira. And so he sends Tomioka and Shinobu. And Shinobu says, "If only demons and humans could get along." And Tomioka tells her, "That's a pipe dream as long as demons hunt them." And the scene cuts back to Zenitsu. And this is what I was talking about in my takeaways of the previous episode. He wonders if his friends hate him because they left him behind, and he thinks if they both try to talk him into it that he finally would have went, but then he realizes Tanjiro took Nezuko with him into the mountain, and that is the moment where he snaps out of his fear and starts going off again, shouting to nobody about how Tanjiro taking a young girl into danger. And so now he enters a mountain alone on his own to go find Nezuko because, you know, he acts like a completely different human when a girl's involved. Now, Tanjiro and Inosuke and the other Demon Slayer member hear a clicking, rattling sound. And out of the darkness, it's a group of the Demon Slayer Corps that are now being controlled by someone else. It almost looks like they're puppets being pulled along on a puppet string. They attack Tanjiro, Inosuke, and the other boy. And Tanjiro catches a sweet scent from one of the controlled men's backs. So what he does, he jumps up and cuts towards the back of one of the Demon Slayer Corps members that's acting funny. And threads are severed, causing the body to fall to the ground. So Tanjiro yells to the others and tells them that they're being controlled by threads and to cut the threads off. So Inosuke jumps into action and cuts most of the threads off of their attackers. And Tanjiro is looking for the location of the demon who is controlling the bodies, and he catches a revolting odor. And when he looks down, he sees a bunch of spiders. And that is when the scene shifts over, and we see the person whose face we still haven't been able to look on screen lift her hand up. And it has web strings coming out of her fingers, just like the puppet master aspect we were discussing. And one of those threads actually catches Tanjiro on his shirt, and he immediately cuts it off, and he realizes that it's the spiders down below that are attaching people to the puppet strings, even though the demon's controlling the strings from there. And finally, we see the demon controlling them, and her tell her puppets, which are the members of the Demon Slayer Corps that are acting funny, to dance until their arms and legs fall off. And Tanjiro realizes cutting the threads isn't going to be enough and that the spiders are just going to replace the threads. So Inosuke thinks they should kill the spiders, but Tanjiro tells him that the spiders are too small and there are too many of them, that they need to find and kill the demon controlling them. And Tanjiro tells Inosuke that if he has some kind of power that can pinpoint the demon's exact location, that it would really help at this point in time. And we learn the other Demon Slayer Corps member's name at this point. His name is Murata. And as Tanjiro is coming up with a plan, another demon that looks similar to the woman with the spider web threads coming out of her fingertips, he walks high above them on spider webs. And he tells Tanjiro that he will not allow them to disturb his family's peaceful life. He says that Mother will make sure to make quick work of Tanjiro and the others. And Inosuke tries to make a jump for the boy demon, but can't get to him. He's just a little bit below. And the boy demon walks off. From here, Inosuke uses beast-breathing seventh form spatial awareness. And this ability allows him to see where the mother demon is sitting in the forest controlling the threads. And the scene moves back to that boy demon that just walked up on them from high above. And he's having an internal conversation with himself, saying that he won't let anyone get in their way, that the five of them are going to live in happiness as a family, and that no one on the mortal plane will tear them apart. And that is how episode 15 ends. So Chase, go ahead and talk to me about your takeaways for that episode.
It was awesome, man. It's really setting up for what's to come for kind of our big climax over in season one. So we're really coming up the mountain now. She'll be coming up the mountain. And it was reminding me a lot of marionettes, like these Demon Slayer core members attached to the spiders. And we're already starting to see a little bit more of Inosuke's power just with that spatial awareness senses. So it's very interesting, all the intricate, different, unique abilities that each one of the core members has. And it already, you're starting to kind of see this is the biggest threat they've faced so far on our journey with our heroes here. And they've not, it's a different type of threat too, because now you're really starting to dive into the demon mess that's really created an atrocity in this world, this universe, because now you're seeing you're no longer facing just one demon. Like, you have a whole bunch of demons on this mountain that they're going to have to make it through. So it's really cool. It really is setting up, but at the same time, it had action too, and it was a different type of action because you realized. It kind of reminded me, we always make this reference to Sabrina in Pokemon. But remember how she controlled that doll that was there with her like psychic powers? It was kind of similar in the way, but it had like the these spiders that had the webs that were controlling all the core members that they were trying to stop this conflict from happening and try to find out what's going on and discover more, which is leading just into more and more questions and more of that horror mystery we kind of have going on here. So I thought it was great. What about you, Jay Nelly?
Yeah, for this one, it was kind of cool. There was a lot of things going on at once. And one of the things that really stood out to me is the fact that the leader of the entire Demon Slayer Corps that we'll meet down the road sent in a full battalion of Demon Slayers, although they may have been at a much lower rank than he anticipated he would have needed, but that they go into this mountain, start going to the mountain Nadagumo, and almost the minute they step in, shit just starts going sideways, and they start attacking and killing each other. So, you know, you don't even know how strong the Demon Slayers are, but the fact that each of them, if they are an official member of the Demon Slayer Corps, at one point they would have had to have passed final selection. So they've got to be somewhat capable. But whatever is in that damn mountain is making them look like they're novices and should not even be a part of the Demon Slayer Corps. So you're kind of left wondering, what the hell are these things in here, and exactly how difficult is it going to be to take these damn things out? Because we see a couple things just here in this episode alone. We see that boy considered mother sitting there playing with the strings. And we see that boy, you know, a high above go and talk to them at first. And so there's a lot of stuff that sets the scene for later on in this show, or at least in the season, in the first season of Demon Slayer here. So I thought some of those things were interesting. Continually seeing Zenitsu kind of go in and out of his stages of him being fearful, not wanting to go in, then being mad at his friends for leaving him, then realizing that the girl's in there, and he's like, well, now I gotta go in there. He's one of those other people that I don't know if he has a lot of thought process either. We talk about Inosuke just making rash decisions. I don't even really know that Zenitsu thinks a whole lot of shit out, to be honest with you. And then we do get to see that the leader of the Demon Slayer Corps, and he sends two Hashira. And one of them we've seen before. We know he's cool as fuck, Giyu Tomioka. And then we get introduced very quickly. We don't have a full introduction, but he also sends Shinobu as well. And, you know, the fact that the Demon Slayer boy, Murata, says that the Mizunoto aren't enough, that they should have sent Hashira, already kind of gives you an idea about these demons and that they are going to be a little bit more difficult than maybe anyone anticipated, including the crow that gave him the damn assignment. Actually, even including the Demon Slayer leader, leader of the whole corps even said, like, a lot of my children, he calls them his children, are dead. Well, I guess I do gotta, like, step it up. And so it's just this is going to be most likely, just looking at it here, this is episode 15 out of, what, 26 in season one. So we're going to be stepping up to what's close to being the climax of action here in the next, you know, couple weeks. And on top of that, too, one other thing I wanted to mention was just what, you know, and I guess maybe I can save that for a little bit from now, but in what we've seen so far, we've got Tanjiro, Zenitsu, and Inosuke, and they all kind of dress their own way. But this, like, group of Demon Slayers, they almost have a uniform of sorts. But then we think about the, and again, we only are talked to about two of the Hashira right now to this point, Tomioka and Shinobu, but you can see what they're wearing, and it's not anything a real uniform. So it just leaves the question, and, you know, maybe that's what I'll say for my debate for the day. But something else I noticed too is that when they have these, it almost reminds me of like the Team Rocket grunts, you know, they all wearing the same damn thing, but the people we follow wearing whatever the hell they want, and the two Hashira that we've seen to this point are wearing what the hell they want. So, you know, and something that I definitely picked up on that, but I do think that this episode is leading into some really big action, and there's going to be a lot of fallout and consequences from whatever is to come going into next week and beyond for season one of Demon Slayer. But yeah, those are my takeaways for episode 15. Chase, do you want to hit us with your debate for the day?
Yeah, and just a side note here, what's wild is, because we were talking about, you mentioned briefly, like, you know, he sent a whole battalion in there and probably didn't think he would need one of the Hashira until the core members mentioned, hey, they need a Hashira. Well, we don't want to get into stuff later on, but you later on we'll kind of talk about this and see why Ubi Ishike, the main guy that we're mentioning that's like burnt, who's over all the Demon Slayer core members, why he probably didn't think he needed a Hashira there. And we'll get into that later on. My debate for the day, that's actually a really good point you brought up, which I'm looking forward to your debate that you mentioned. So we'll get into that later. But before we get into my debate, another mention that just how you mentioned the outfits, it kind of made me think of the Power Rangers. Because if you think about it, like, remember the Power Rangers way back in the day, how you had, like, the Red Ranger who would wear, like, a red t-shirt to school, or the Green Ranger would wear, like, a green t-shirt. Look at Giyu, like, he has, like, yeah, he has, like, that checkered kind of side cloak with the red. But it's almost like you feel like he has some sort of blue. And then Tanjiro, when he was learning, like, the water, water forms, he wore that like blue almost like, I forgot what they call it, it wasn't a kimono, but like, you know, like a cardigan or whatever it was, almost like in like respect to Uro Kodaki. So just a thought there, which we'll get into that in a bit. But if you could, let's see, just a thought, if you could take out of our core group here, let's just say, based on what we know so far, Nezuko, Zenitsu, Inosuke, and Tanjiro, and you were going into this mission blind, right? Going up into Mount Nadagomo, and you could only take two. Who's the two you would take with you, and why?
Oh, this one's hard, and the reason why I say it's hard is because I know Tanjiro would be one of the ones I would take for sure, and that is simply because I know of all of them there, he's the one that tends to think through the problems and not just act. You know, with Zenitsu, you gotta basically pray that dude falls asleep to be useful at all, and for Inosuke, you gotta, like, pretty much worry he doesn't hurt himself more than the enemies, because he's just flying all over the place, smashing into shit. You know, so I would probably say Tanjiro and Nezuko, but the one thing I will say why I'm a little bit hesitant about Nezuko is that right here to this point, we have not seen Nezuko in too much action. We saw her in the very, very beginning before Uro Kodaki even agreed to train Tanjiro when she kicked that weak-ass demon's head off, and that was probably the weakest demon that we've seen. We saw that, but then when she tried to help him fight the swamp demon, that's when you started to see Nezuko has shortcomings in her abilities and doesn't really know a whole lot just yet. And so we don't really know how she's been able to gather from there, because that wasn't too long ago, and she really hasn't come out of her box except to meet Zenitsu and be introduced to him. So I'm just not really sure where her abilities are at. And if you remember, when she did fight the swamp demon, the demon was started to recognize her patterns and her movements pretty quickly and was able to utilize that and weaponize her own predictability against her to where she wasn't as much of a threat against that demon. And that's just a swamp demon here that really its bloody demon art was to split itself into three. And outside of that, breathe underwater in the swamp. But now we've got these other things that just seem like they are entirely on another planet of abilities and strength than that demon. So now I'm stuck of like, well, if that demon could figure out Nezuko's ability, what's to say these demons aren't going to be able to do the same exact thing? And the only answer I had to that, to why I still think I would favor taking Nezuko with Tanjiro in this scenario, is the fact that she is a demon, and really she can't be killed if it's not by daylight or removal by the Nichirin sword or, you know, Muzan's blood inside her. So really, there, the one thing I would take is I know she's strong and she's able to survive, but also that she's not really able to be killed. Even if you cut her to pieces, and none of these demons have a sword that can cut her head off, you know, they'd have to tie her up and just wait for sunlight. I think that she would be a little bit more useful, just a little bit more useful than Inosuke, where it really depended. If Inosuke would just chill the fuck out for 10 seconds and maybe listen to instruction, my answer would change, and I would like to take Inosuke because he is strong and he does have an ability, but you know what? He's human and he can be injured and he can be killed. So because of that, I'm taking Tanjiro and Nezuko.
Yeah, I mean, that's tempting. Unfortunately, I'm going to go the other route. I'm going to take Tanjiro and Inosuke in hopes that hopefully Inosuke can get his act together for like 5 fucking minutes and like fight as a team. And the reason I say that is because, and you would think I'd pick Zenitsu, but just like you said, I mean, you kind of got to hope he falls asleep and calms down for a moment. And you don't really know what you're going to face in there. And we've already seen that based on, you know, even talking here today, Zenitsu has loyalty. So you can leave him with Nezuko in the box and know he's going to protect her because we've already seen that previously. So, you know, even if he falls asleep and freaks out, he's going to turn into a badass and protect Nezuko from whatever's around that mountain. And he wants to stay back there anyways. So let him be satisfied, protect her with the love of his life, apparently, right? And protect the box. If worse comes to worse, you know, because we don't really know if at this point, really, whether we've seen Nezuko literally like sleep for almost a year before at the beginning of this. Like, you know, she was asleep for so long while Tanjiro was training. You know, you don't know if she's going to sleep, if she's going to pop out of the box, or what's going to happen. And we've seen, you know, Tanjiro leave the box before while people watched over her. So I think the best person to do that would be Zenitsu. And then Inosuke, hope for the best that he could at least fight as a team, which, you know, hopefully we'll see a little bit on that next week. But it made me also think, too, before we get into your debate, you mentioned briefly in this episode we're talking about today on the podcast. Remember how Inosuke was like eating crows? What do you think, like, and truly I don't know because I've never seen this actually come up in Demon Slayer, at least to my knowledge, so if you know, please let me know. Like, what do you think the consequences would be if Inosuke ate one of somebody's, like, communication crows?
I'm sure they'd probably kick him out of the Demon Slayer core. Yeah, I don't know. That's probably something they'd never run into. You ever think, you imagine being the major leader of overall the Demon Slayer Corps, the guy with that burnt face and the blindness. If like he gets this report that, hey, one of your Demon Slayers ate one of the crows. You're like, what the fuck, dude? He would be so thrown off. Like, Like, I don't think this is something that he ever would have anticipated having to deal with. He'd probably just be such at a loss. Like, what do you mean the members ate a crow? Like, I don't know, dude. So I'm just going to go out on my ass here and say that he would just get kicked out for that. But he does have a lot of abilities to bring in a lot of positives. So maybe they would have forgiven him or forgave him. Apologies. But, yeah, I don't know. If they did forgive him, I don't know what kind of punishment would be suited for the crime, but I don't think killing a communication crow and on top of that killing it by devouring it is something that they've really had to think about too much.
And I wonder, it makes me wonder, like, what happened with that fucking guy that he ran into on the mountain? He took his, like, sword and shit. I wonder if he ate his fucking crow or if that thing just like abandoned him. Like, I've never heard of a crow like abandoning a Demon Slayer member, right? Like, it's almost like a Pokemon in a way. Like, you don't abandon your master. I wonder if he like fucking ate it. Like, who fucking knows, man? So just a thought. But yeah, you want to get into your debate for the day? I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, for sure. And just one more thing on that before I do. It just reminds me of that line in Game of Thrones when the Thenn was talking to Tormund. He's like, just one time before you die, you really have to try, crow. But anyways, my debate for the day is, yeah, talking about like these uniforms, man. Like is there certain battalions that have to be suited up and uniform with each other? Because we've seen, and again, keep in mind, Chase has actually watched even further into the one Demon Slayer episode that's out for season 4. I've at least watched the season 3. He's read all the manga series. But point being is that of all the characters we see, it's really only these groups of Demon Slayers that come in and out every once in a while that are all matching and wearing the same shit. Where Tanjiro, Zenitsu, Nezuko, Inosuke, Tomioka, Urokodaki, Shinobu, they're all wearing whatever the hell they want. So my question is, what's up with these groups that have to wear the same shit? And are they, what rank are they? Are they, I know there's 10 ranks of Demon Slayers, but if you're ranked a certain one, do you have to dress a certain way? Is there any rhyme or reason to that? Or is this just a way for the show to basically almost the same thing with Star Wars and Stormtroopers. Just throw the bodies out there and let you know that they do exist. Like, what do you think?
This is actually something I truly, really don't know the answer to. I'll have to do more research into that because that's kind of the thing of, like, you know, the Demon Slayer lore. It's kind of like Game of Thrones or Harry Potter in a way. Like, it's so expansive, which is so cool about this series. Like, you know, they even have prequels and other novels and stuff that would be written by other side writers. But I stick to what the original artist did with the original series. So, original mangaka, as they call it, writer, artist. But it's really interesting. It makes the only conclusion I've come up to in this, because I've thought about this before. So, the way I'll have to answer this kind of one by one, step by step. So, Nezuko, I would say, is a unique prospect here because she's a demon. So she's in this situation at this point in time, she is. So she's not part of the Demon Slayer core, you know, at this moment in time, what we're looking at. She is just a demon that's traveling with Tanjiro. And, you know, ironically, too, she has, like, her demon eyes and then wears the pink kimono. But we saw her wear the pink kimono before, even in episode 1 when she was a human. So that's kind of, like, just like her normal clothes. Whereas in Tanjiro, too, you know, he's always had that green checkered cardigan from the beginning. But the way I'll answer this is if we saw how Tanjiro trained with Urokodaki, who we know was a previous Hashira, the water Hashira, way before Gyu. You know, he had that blue kimono that was there, that cardigan. and it kind of showed some of the water symbolism, and he wore the mask supporting Uro Kodaki. Well, we'll get into more of Zenitsu later, but Zenitsu, he wears that yellow kind of cardigan, and we find we don't want to give anything away later, but he was trained by someone very significant, despite his abilities or not, like he was. And if we look at the Hashira, the two, we'll just stick to the two we know right now. Gyu Tomioka, we know he was trained by Uro Kodaki because he wrote Uro Kodaki a letter. And we can kind of see how he wears a little bit of the blue, just kind of supporting, I guess, his, maybe my thought is supporting Uro Kodaki or whoever trained him. And Shinobu, we don't want to give anything away about her, but it seems like her colors really reflect her abilities that we'll find out later on. So my thought is here, which I don't have any true backing on this, I'll have to do more research, that ones that were trained by former Hashira or whatever a really high level master is, it's almost like they wear something as to honor their former master. Now, I don't know, is maybe Tanjiro, he just stuck to the checkered cardigan maybe to support his old family. I don't really know, but that would be maybe my thought on that. So that's kind of my best thought in support of that debate there. What about you, Janelle?
Yeah, just it's hard to say simply because, again, I like the explanations that you might have given of why the ones who wear whatever the hell they want wear those. But my thing is, like, why? Like, I guess the bigger thing is, why the hell are these other people wearing the same damn thing? Because everyone had to be trained by somebody, you know? So you'd imagine everyone would just have what, you know, in your, the way you had mentioned it, everyone would just wear something that is reminiscent of whoever trained them. And it almost, like I said, this is like a school uniform. Like, these people came in with this like dark brown or black, full-blown, I don't know, they like went down the whole length of the body. And every single one of them looked very similar. So for me, the way I'm guessing it as is, it's just the very similar thing to, like I mentioned with Star Wars, where they just kind of threw stormtroopers in there to give bodies and let you know that. Because I remember when Uro Kodaki said that the Demon Slayer Corps numbers in the hundreds. Well, really, who do we really follow? We follow these four that we've got in Tanjiro, Inosuke, Nezuko, and Zenitsu. But we also follow, I mean, I know we had mentioned Hashira, and I'm not going to get into all the ones we haven't met just yet. But, you know, let's just say, for argument's sake, what we've seen, we really only follow the four that we've got here, our core four, and the Hashira. So then that, out of total, that's how many? I don't even know. Maybe 16? Maybe 16 characters that we follow. So really, to me, it's probably just just letting you know that, yeah, there's other Demon Slayers out there, but they're just not important to the storyline. So they all lump them together and make them look like each other, very similar to where Stormtroopers, you don't know who the best Stormtrooper is. And if you do, they look a little bit different than the other ones. Like that one Stormtrooper in the prequel series, or I'm sorry, the sequel series, the one that had all the chrome, I forgot the name, but the one that was all chromed up and looked really shiny, you just had the feeling that that one was a little bit stronger or more capable than the other ones because it looked different. Where these other ones, I think that's the whole point, is they make them look the same. You don't know who they are. You don't know who's strongest out of all of them. I think that one guy's name was Murata, and you don't even learn the other people's names because they're just not important to the series. So for me, I think they probably just put it in there as, yeah, here are bodies, and like, so that way you know that there's more than just 16 total Demon Slayers. And if that's not the case, then I'm at a loss because I don't know why the heck we're fucking wearing uniforms to school to kill some demons, but whatever.
Yeah, I mean, I can see it. I mean, maybe they were lower battalions. Maybe they're like a lower level and they just got that. I don't know. Because I'm thinking of one Hashira wears something similar, but they definitely flare it up a little bit. Not giving too much away. But yeah, I mean, I really, that's something I don't have an answer to. So if you know, let us know. Definitely feel free to share. You know, definitely let us know here. But yeah, you want to close this out for the day, Jay Nelly?
Heck yeah, man. Sounds like a plan. Well, folks, if this is the first time that you've listened to us, we really hope you enjoyed what you heard and you continue to listen on from here on out. If you have been with us since the very beginning, thank you for continuously being the shields that guard the realms of fantasy. If you're looking to figure out where you can find us online, we're on all the social sites. We're on Instagram at Official Ridiculous Patronus. We're on TikTok at Ridiculous Patronus. We have a backup Instagram at @fact_or_fantasy. We've got a backup TikTok at @fact_or_fantasy. We've got a Facebook fan page, Chase and Josh Factor Fantasy. We're on YouTube at Ridiculous Patronus. We're on Twitter, RP Factor Fantasy, Snapchat, RP Factor Fantasy. And we do have our own website, ridiculouspatronus.blogspot.com. So please click like, subscribe, follow along, tune into everything that we're doing here, leave written reviews, leave star ratings, comment on the posts. All of the engagement you bring us is super helpful to us here on the show, so please continue to do so. And then in terms of the podcast itself, if you're an Apple user, you can find us on Apple Podcast. If you're an Android user, you can find us on Google Play. We're also on Spotify, iHeartRadio, Amazon Music, Audible, Stitcher, Acast, our host site Podbean, wherever you get your podcasts. Chase and Josh Factor Fantasy are there, but we are out for the day because this has been another ridiculous production.
Chase and Josh
Factor Fantasy signing off.